This is a replay of the Thursday night, 4th of July WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It is the 4th of July, 2024. If you were listening last year, 4th of July, 2023, you might recall that on our number one in the county FM station in Arizona, we choreographed the fireworks to the big mining display that they have for Freeport-McMoRan. Been doing this for, 30-something years. Okay. So last year, all hell breaks loose when we lose power and discover that the fuel line to the generator is not working. So we're down, right? We've announced this for a month, and we're down. No choreographing to nothing. So it's going to be fine tonight, isn't it? About a half hour ago, while I was happily sitting here just going over little Loveland facts, I get a call. Gee, you know, it sounds like the FM transmitter's hiccuping a bit. So I go and I take a look online because I'm over 100 miles away from it. And it seems to be fine, but I'm seeing a little more reverse power than I'd like to see, you know, power coming back at me more than I wanted. And I think, well, I do have a thermometer in there now. Yeah, after the last time we had had an AC failure. And I look and it's 118 degrees. Needless to say, had to power down that transmitter in a picosecond, as well as the other transmitter in there for another FM station I've got. And so it is. So I thank God for friends like my buddy Jeff Baer, who I called, and I said, you got to go to the transmitter site. And so he does, and he says, well, the bad news is one of them's blowing hot air. The good news is one of them's blowing cold air. I said, well, excellent. And I said, now, you've opened the door, and I can see the temperature's already dropping. But I can't ask you to swelter for the next hour, but I would appreciate it if you could come back and in about an hour and see whether we can power that other one up or how we're doing. Now, in the meantime, my first thought was just leave the door open. And then he said, no, half of the county is up on this hill ready to look at the fireworks. You don't want to leave this unattended. I said, well, that's probably right. So I've been sitting here while I've been happily thinking about Loveland, more happily than many people in this saga, by the way, which you'll hear every bit of it. But I've been watching the temperature like a hawk, and all right, last I saw was 107. Well, so if I seem a little distracted at some point, say around 8:45 or so, that's when I've got to make the fateful decision about whether I'm powering up or not. And yeah, at stake, of course, is am I frying a Nautel transmitter? And the answer is, well, maybe we'll see. Now, shall we get to something more fun here, or again, less fun for some of the players? I've never seen so many different quote-unquote facts online for something, especially something fairly obscure, where most of them are just dead wrong. And so I thought, we need to clarify Loveland. So the Loveland saga, you know, the Charles Wright 103rd Street Rhythm and Band, wonderful hit. You know the record. So I guess we should start out, let you hear just a little of it so you'll know what we're talking about. Here's how it was when it finally became a hit.
I have heard all of our love.
Land. All right, you know the song. You'll be hearing more of it. So that actually did not originate with Charles Wright or anybody in the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm and Band. It was 1958 when Luther Dixon, under his pseudonym Barney Williams, wrote a song called Loveland. And it was recorded, actually, by Al Hibbler on Decca. Now, the first mass confusion when you look at reality versus what's online is who's the co-writer. Well, the co-writer on the record is listed as James Lee. Now, that's Jim Lee. He's a known quantity. He wrote Let's Dance for Chris Montez, and he owned Monogram Label, and he also owned Indigo Label, which had Kathy Young, 1,000 Stars, which he produced. But he was an L.A. guy, while Dixon was a New Yorker. He was born and he died in Jacksonville, Florida, but he grew up as a kid and lived in New York. And of course, you might know all the years he was credited with being the A&R force behind Scepter Wand Records, which is all true. Now, so online, I've seen it credited to Luther Dixon under the pseudonym Barney Williams sometimes, and just other times as Luther Dixon. And by the way, the pseudonym's well known. Barney Williams and Luther Dixon are one and the same. But I've seen it credited as a co-author to Rose Marie McCoy. But I've yet to see anything official. Now, there could be an argument made for he'd be more likely to run into Rose Marie McCoy because Jim Lee was on the West Coast, and Rose Marie was definitely New York-based. She's about 15 years older than Luther, and her songwriting credits are a virtual who's who of the R&B performance world. Ruth Brown, Faye Adams, Otis Williams, Big Mabel, Louis Jordan, on and on and on. But either way, whether it is, and I think it is Jim Lee, but whether it's Jim Lee or Rose Marie McCoy, there is absolutely no doubt that Luther Dixon wrote Loveland, at the very least co-wrote it. Now, unfortunately, it didn't break Al Hibbler's dry spell. The last hit that he had was 1955, and never one after that. But in 1958, on Decca, they released Loveland, and this is how it sounded.
I've been hearing all about Loveland and all its wonderful charm. Where sweethearts beat so sweetly, where lovers love completely. Oh, please take me with you. Take me with you.
Take me with you.
Oh, I'd love to go to Loveland with you.
To Loveland with you.
All right, so it did not hit, but it was well distributed. Decca certainly put it out there for everyone to hear, even if you might argue that no one did. So let's move a decade forward and talk about Charles Wright for a moment, who, by the way, was absolutely no slouch looking at his history. He was born in Mississippi, but he grew up in South Central L.A., and by 1960, he was accomplished. He'd been in the Turks and the Twilighters, the Shields, and I would say, embarrassingly, the Galahads. Or, yeah, well, and at the time, in 1960, he was working for Bob Keane's Delphi Records as A&R director. And that's when he came on a group that had been the Cubans. But in 1959, with all that unpleasantness there, they changed their name. And they became the Upfronts, and that lasted about a picosecond. And then in quick succession, they became Little Caesar and the Romans. So in 1961, Charles Wright hears the group, hears the song, and said, this is going to be a hit, and he produces it. And the hit, of course, is Those Oldies But Goodies Remind Me of You. And maybe we'll play it later. I'm sure you'll remember it in case you don't right now. But it was top 10 nationally on Delphi. Now, if you wonder why there's no follow-up to this saga, all right, first you need to know there was no Caesar, toga or not, and they very often on stage wore togas, big nor little, no Caesar, and that led to the fight. Carl Burnett was the lead singer, but it's David Johnson who does the spoken word portion of the song. So they have this heated disagreement of which or of them was Little Caesar. I kid you not. This goes to blows. I'm leader Little Caesar. No, I'm Little Caesar. Well, the bottom line is nobody was Little Caesar. The band broke up in 1962. By this time, Charles says, you know, maybe I should just form my own band. So he forms the Wright Sounds. Yes, W-R-I-G-H-T, sounds. And so many people are in this group that I'll give you an example and you'll see what I mean. Daryl Dragon was in this group for a while. I'm not not kidding you. So over a six-year period, they had ins and outs and musicians were added and they were subtracted. Of course, James Gadsden is somewhat of a constant. Please keep that name in mind, James Gadsden. So the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band didn't spring from Charles Wright's imagination by any means. It sprung from Fred Smith. Fred Smith owned a little label, and he was the guy who produced a theme song for the Magnificent Montague on KGFJ in Los Angeles, the Soul Station. It was so popular that he decided he'd release it as a single in response to listener demand. And the problem is there was no group. The Magnificent Montague theme was Leon Haywood and Bobby Womack, and Charles Wright did play on it and a few others. So it was Fred Smith, the label owner, who said, I'm going to call him a Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band. Now, lucky for Charles, because he was with an ever-changing ragtag group of musicians, doubling as session players for Nashville West. And that was a studio in Los Angeles, where one label owner, Fred Smith, comes in with one well-known comic, Bill Cosby. And Cosby was working with Smith on an album, and he needed a backing band. And so Smith suggested the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm and Band at the moment, you know, whoever they were, Charles Wright, yes. But meanwhile, Charles Wright's pretty lucky because Cosby not only likes the band, but he has an in with Warner Brothers, obviously, because his stuff was all on Warner Brothers. So, yeah, I don't have to belabor what became right there of Charles Smith and the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band initially. So now, meanwhile, you know, I played you a little bit of Loveland, and we can hear more of it later, and of course hits like Express Yourself, and on and on. To hear James Gadsden tell it, James was writing a song, and he called it Loveland. And he had help from Don Trotter. Now you're saying, who? Well, Don probably wasn't in any of the Watts 103rd Street incarnations, though he was a rehearsal player from time to time. But like so many of the Los Angeles R&B vocal group Harmony players, no shortage of credits. In fact, he was in the Valiants that turned into the Untouchables, and nice voice. Yeah, you remember Poor Boy Needs a Preacher, or Raising Sugarcane. Maybe we'll play some of those later. Some people compared his voice to Pookie Hudson. Nice compliment. Anyhow, so according to James, he'd been writing Loveland and didn't really have an ending, and Trotter helped him finish it. Okay, so the next year, Don Trotter forms his own band, Don Trotter and the Eighth Wonder. And he releases a 45, The Apartment, and on the flip side of the 45 is Loveland. And one word now. No, before it had been two words, Love and Land. Now it's Loveland, one word. And James Gadsden looked at the writer's credit and was really surprised because it said Don Trotter and Charles Wright. And so, of course, Gadsden's ready to say something, but the problem is if it sold two copies, that was two more than anybody knew about. So, you know, he's going to let it go. Now, by the way, this has become a treasured record somewhere. I have it. You're going to hear it. It's not online. You won't find it on YouTube. I guarantee you. And for good reason, too. The bounds of good taste and all that. But it has become somewhat of a Northern Soul classic. That explains everything, doesn't it? And actually, somewhat of a beach music song, too. But here, in 1969, was Don Trotter, who supposedly wrote Loveland, along with James Gadsden. And, of course, we know, we have already established that Luther Dixon wrote it for Al Hibbler. Okay, well, here was Don Trotter's attempt of it.
Love.
wonder is that nobody noticed he wasn't singing on key, but that's another story. All right, so that's good old Don Trotter and the Eighth Wonder doing Loveland in 1969. And so we have James Gadson, and so far he doesn't really care that he's not credited, but he doesn't understand why he's not. And of course, Luther Dixon knows nothing about any of it at this point, right? And so he goes to Charles Wright and said, man, you got to record this song. And Charles Wright pretty much said, well, only if you sing it. And we'll again play some of that coming up, because I want you to keep James's voice in mind for what's going to come up next. So the Loveland saga continues right here on WGN Radio.
All of our love land and all of its mentions, but I know I'll never get to love land unless I'm wrapped up in your arms. Got to take me with you, Eva. Please take me with you. How I'd love to walk that a golden street, hand in hand with you, where all the lovers meet. Oh, I'd love to go to Loveland with you, pretty baby, 'cause my love is true. I swear I do. I have heard all about Loveland.
So that is James Gadson on lead, and it was at his utter insistence that Charles Wright record it. After he heard the Don Trotter version, he thought, we can do better on that, and boy, did they. And initially, he was very pleased. There's his voice, there's his song, it sounds good, it's a hit. Well, then he looks at the record, and it's again credited, writers-wise, to Trotter and Wright. Well, now, he's really upset now. He quits. And in fact, interestingly, at the time, Motown wanted to hire him. And he said, I'm not singing for anybody ever again. Now, that was kind of okay because he was probably the inmost session demand drummer at the time. And yeah, I know you'd have Hal Blaine saying, that was me. But in any event, believe me, James Gadson was on a lot of records. Who's Who of Motown, Marvin Gaye and everybody else. But Paul McCartney and Herbie Hancock and Quincy Jones and Albert King and on and on and on. But after a while, it started to get to him, and he just wasn't letting it go. So he gets together with a gal, Ciola Williams, also from South Central. She changes the lyric. Of course, it's his melody, and they release in 1971 pretty much the same melody with Gotta Find My Baby. You can hear the similarity to the instrumental track on Loveland, but there's no complaints anywhere because, of course, no issues because, as far as anybody knows, there are absolutely no sales. Meantime, Charles Wright is a little concerned because he's thinking, I got to get James Gadson's voice off Loveland. I got to put mine on that. Well, you'll hear that coming up right after the news on WGN Radio.
Have heard
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So there it is. That's Charles Wright. Yeah, the actual Charles Wright doing Loveland instead of James Gadson. Now, you'd think that that's the end of our story. No. You see, the problem is when Charles Wright did it originally, originally, put that in quotes, it was a big hit. Well, when things are a big hit, after a while, the writer might get a hold of this knowledge. And so it was that Luther Dixon figured, you remember Luther. Luther is the guy who wrote it originally in 1958 for Al Hibbler. Well, since Loveland by Charles Wright, with James Gadson on lead, sold a lot of copies, Luther figured, yeah, it's worth it to go to court. Now, here's the best part of the story. Of course, you know he wins, all right. But the best part of the story is this. Here's James Gadson, who, you know, was dissed by everybody, clearly by Don Trotter, and absolutely by Charles Wright. And so he gets this call, and this call comes from Don Trotter. Hey, old buddy.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm getting sued, and I need you to testify for me. I need you to testify that you wrote that with me.
Again, testify, I wrote it with you. See, you said I didn't write it.
Yeah. And so, well, I'll give you a gold record. You got a gold record for it?
Yeah.
And so, needless to say, James politely, we'll say that for a family show, decided that he was not going to, in fact, be there in court. Not that it would have mattered. So, of course, Luther Dixon prevailed and got the royalties from Loveland. So that's the Loveland saga, and I've hinted to it several times, and I think that the James Gadson is on YouTube. The Don Trotter is not, and the Al Hibbler is not. I pulled him from my original 45s, and if you're saying that Don Trotter was awfully scratchy, you are so right about that. But, you know, I have to be willing to listen to the songs to take out the pops and clicks, and there was only so many times I could listen to the Don Trotter version, even though it's beloved by somebody. I don't know them personally. All right, so any questions? There will be no quiz later. 888-876-5593. But we will play an Untouchables record since Don was not a lead singer in the Untouchables, but he certainly was involved with all their stuff like Poor Boy Needs a Preacher, Raising Sugar Cane, that's my favorite. All right, so, but in the meantime, we'll change the subject entirely because Dave is in Forest City, Iowa. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello.
What's going on?
Well, I was studying up on the 1968 group called Ohio Express, uh-huh. And this fellow called Joey Levine was the singer.
Of course. Well, he also was the writer in so many other things, although I think the best thing he ever did was when it was reunion with Life as a Rock. But, you know, he did the Third Rail, Run, 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 or Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. He wrote that with Artie Resnick. And he also was in the Kazanet's Cat Singing Orchestral Circus, Quick Joey Small. And so that was, but the best example of Joey Levine, without a doubt, is the reunion record, Life is a Rock. Do you remember it?
No, I didn't even know about it.
Okay, then you have to hear it. You have to hear it, because this is Joey Levine at his finest. I'd say sing along with it, but I'll sing along off the air with it. Here you go.
Bumble and the Stingers, Martha Hooper, Rachel Singers, Lonnie Mackett, Twang and Eddie Hisman, Ring, we're going steady, take it easy, take me high, lie, lie, house of fire, locomotion, poker, passion, deeper purple, satisfaction, baby, baby, gotta, gimme, getting hotter, Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Richie Valens, end of story, my feast of Fujiyama, Kamasutra, Rama Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre Barry, Righteous Archers, Nielsen, Harry, Shimmy, Jimmy, Coco Poppin, Fats is back and finger poppin'.
Life is a rock.
It was a wonderful song.
Yeah, that's good, and I can see why it would be a hit.
Yeah.
And so I noticed that I'd been looking for the a video of the singer of the Ohio Express, and they substituted another band and another singer in the videos, and Joey Levine didn't appear in 1968.
Well, right. Most of that most of that stuff was studio, but I'm going to go to YouTube and see if there's Joey Levine videos. There probably are. He's doing another Life as a Rock. Yeah, he's a lot of them. Yeah.
So he turned up in 2015 in Hamburg, Germany, singing Yummy, Yummy, Yummy for some radio station promotion.
Well,
and
now
so,
do you know what he did in between?
No, well, he wrote a lot of advertising.
That was the hot ticket. That was the money. And it was a lot of stuff. You know, whether it was Almond Joy or Mounds or Pepsi or Diet Coke or Sears or Chevrolet. I mean, a lot of stuff. And so he made a very good living, Anheuser-Busch alone. He's done very, very well. And of course, you know, did lead on a lot of that stuff. It was, all that Kazanus Cat stuff, the Super K production, so like the Ohio Express, you mentioned, the 1910 Fruit Company, the music explosion, you know, and all that. I thought Life as a Rock was the piece de resistance for him.
Oh, okay. Thanks for telling me about it.
Yeah.
But the 1910 Fruit Gum Company was, the singer was Mark Gutkowski.
Well, and right, they were originally the Hydes. And
Jekyll and the Hydes,
right? Because Frank Jekyll was in that group, and they were from they're from Linden, you know, in New Jersey.
Oh, so Jekyll was explaining what happened to the Fruit Gum Company, and he said that the musicians quit because they didn't like being laughed at, and when they would tell other musicians that they were with a 19 Fruit Gum Company, other musicians laughed at them.
Right, but keep this in mind. As the 1910 Fruit Gum Company, they sold almost 4 million records. So,
and
you know, it doesn't
they were...
Go ahead.
Their biggest one was also sold in 5 different countries.
Well, most of them were worldwide, of course. The labels would have those deals, of course, but it was in the States.
Different
was,
languages, 5 different languages.
In the States, it was on Buddha. But if you look at the number of people who were former members, it's close to a small phone book. I mean, it's over 2 dozen people.
Okay.
So,
do they? What happens to these musicians? Do other bands pick them up,
quit? You name it, they do it all. Some guys go and they become studio musicians. Some guys join other bands. Some guys produce or write. The first thing is, if you're in a group, you have to ask yourself, do I want to tour? Because unless you're writing it, your money's going to come from touring. And so a lot of these guys don't want to be on the road nonstop. They disbanded in 1970. It was a very short run, but that whole little genre was very short, blessedly so. It was a 3-year period. And, so not unusual. I would have to go back and look at what happened to some of the folks. I don't know. I would say, I don't even know if Mark Gutkowski is still alive. Do you?
No, but Frank...
Jekyll is, of course.
He was. It seemed like he had made a living as a musician for all these years.
But not
having big hit records.
Right.
Apparently.
Oh well, sure. Well, and again, a lot of them make money where you're not going to know their names, but they're doing very well. Whether it's session work or it's a deal where they're actually writing. You know, writing it is the hot ticket if you can do that.
Okay. The only session musician I heard of was called Snyder, Bob Snyder.
Well, obviously, there are tons and tons of session. By the way, while we're talking, I'm busy trying to find Mark Gutkowski, and all I come up with is a real estate agent in Palm Springs, and that's not it. So I'm going to find him. Now that's
G-U-T.
My mission. Yeah, I know, Kowski. I know how to spell it. I'll have to, I hadn't thought about him in forever, so now I want to find out, is he still with us? I will look, and I'm glad his name is not Smith, because Gutkowski's pretty good. Not that many people named it. So that's good.
Did he really play the Hammond organ?
Yeah.
Or was that just for show? Okay.
No, a B3? Yeah. Yeah, that's...
All right. And was the band playing in the studio, or did they use studio musicians?
Yeah, well, the answer to that is always both. I mean, there's always studio musicians behind these bands when they're making records. It's not just them.
Really?
But, oh, yeah. You know, there's a lot of production, and there's a lot of post-production on most of this stuff, too. But in any event, I would assume that some, if not all of them, were at least in the session on those records. No reason that they wouldn't have been. But, of course, a lot of production went into that, and that's where we come back to Joey Levine.
Yeah. So the producers wanted them to record Simon Says, but they didn't want to do it. But they decided they should do it just to make the producers happy. So the previous band recorded quarter notes on the bass, and the Fruit Comb Company decided they'd do eighth notes on the bass. And if you listen to it, it sounds good. And the producers liked it, and it became a big hit.
Yeah.
Simon Says. And that might be kind of a children's song.
Yeah. Well, it was...
And that's why... People laughed at them?
No, I mean, that genre came in big time for a brief period of time, that bubblegum genre. But the guy who wrote it was Chiprut, Elliot Chiprut, and he was not in the group, as far as I know. And, you know, Kazanet's Cats produced it, and then there, you know, it got covered in Italy, you know, and things like that, and in France, by other groups, not by them.
Did you know this stuff? Or did you look it up?
No, well, I know that stuff, but I don't know what happened to Gutowski, you know, so I want to find that out. But I know that I know Elliot Chiprut wrote it, yes, but I don't even know where he is today. You know, bubblegum is not my favorite stuff, but Elliot Chiprut was a guy from Brooklyn, and he wrote things for, like, TV and movies as well. But he did, much to his shame, I guess, did write that, Simon Says. So yeah.
He did, to his shame.
I mean, when you look at the volume of his work, I guarantee you that, Take a Giant Step Into Your Heart by the 1910 Fruit Gum Company, he wrote that too, top of the list, he was an interest, is, I guess he's still with us. I got to look it up. I'll find out. See, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is Elliot Chiprut still alive? I don't know. He might not be big enough for a big obit, but let's see what we can get. I mean, his family would have loved him, so let's see. Well, he's born in 1944, and so... Oh, he lives in DeLand. Oh, my. Well, this is 10 years ago, though. He moved to DeLand, which is, not all that far from Daytona Beach, and he was playing electric piano at home. And let's see what else I can find. Okay, I found his phone number from last year. I don't feel we'll be calling, but Elliot Chiprut was a friend of Katz, so that was the connection there. But anyway,
okay. Were Katz and Kazanet still alive?
As far as I know.
Okay.
So I gotta find out. The Singing Orchestral Circus. I haven't heard of any obits on them, so one would think, they're big enough for an obit, I would think. They're still alive. Let's find out. I don't know. Louis Katz,
A Little Bit of Soul was a good one by Katz and Katzenitz.
Yeah, let's see.
Music Explosion.
Right, absolutely. Okay, this is not the same guy. All right. Yes, I will find out, and I will let you know. That'll be my mission.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up. Yes, got to see if Katz and Kazanet are still with us, coming up on WGN Radio.
So high, raisin sugar cane.
Louisiana sun burning on my head.
Raisin sugar cane.
Cut that sugar cane. The boss man said, haven't got a dime and I'm getting no, just to fill the rich man's sugar bowl.
Raisin sugar cane.
Raisin sugar cane.
Raisin sugar cane.
I work a lot. like a dog in the livelong day. But on Saturday night, gonna get my pay. Dress a fit to kill, take my woman now. Go into town and dance and forget about raisin sugar cane, yeah, yeah. Don't you know that my sweet woman makes me feel so? She's sweeter like a loving woman should. Makes me
feel. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, those are the Untouchables, and that was the group that Don Trotter was in, too. Till I'm in the cane again. That was great. All right, I found Jerry Kazanets. He's 81 years old. He's living in Tampa. I'm still looking on Jeff Katz, Jeffrey, that's J-E-F-F-R-Y, Katz. I'll try to find him as well. I think I can. So we're getting there, Dave. We found Kazanets, and of course, you know Joey Levine's still with us. So, Eduardo in Tampa, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, a couple of things. First, I was watching a little bit of the Capitol 4. They had Smokey Robinson, by far the best performer tonight.
Oh, he's.
I mean, great. They did have Sheila E. and Sister Sledge, but Smokey Robinson knocked it out. He was the best one.
Well, I'll tell you what. He is one of the greatest writers of soul records from the 60s ever. I mean, his stuff is just sublime.
Yeah, they were showing photos of him in the early days with Diana Ross and Motown, the sure. Black and White. It was very nice. I like the way they threw that in there.
Good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, very nice.
Excellent. So what else? Okay, yeah. Tomorrow's Friday. You're going to hear something tomorrow from Publix?
From Publix, maybe, yeah. They had interviews today,
okay.
too.
Oh, yeah?
So right. We'll see if that's true or not.
Okay.
As far as getting notifications tomorrow.
Okay.
But I'll definitely let you know on next week for sure.
Yeah, no, I want to know about that. And I forget now. I should remember, but someone called and suggested you should look at logistics jobs. And I think you'd be great at that.
Logistic job.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of them too. You can look for that that online and stuff like that. But if you're saying you don't know what a logistics person does, that's the person who manages to get inventory from point A to point B. So you determine the most efficient and cost-effective ways to move inventory, and it can be locally as well. But that's logistics.
Yeah. Well, I'm always checking Indeed.
That might be a category you've never thought about. So check it out.
Yeah,
I think you could.
Yeah, I was
going to
bring
that
up. Did you hear the story about them stealing the ACs because of the copper in them? AC units.
Well,
I saw this on Inside Edition. Yeah, they were stealing them. I was surprised to hear about that story.
Well,
and even the ones on the window too.
Yeah, here's one of the things that happened. This past quarter, the second quarter of 2024, copper reached $5 a pound, and that's astronomical
okay.
money for copper. I mean, that's a lot of money, and there's a lot of copper to steal. That's why I say, like, AM ground systems, you know, stations, radio stations have discovered that, my God, their ground system's gone. And so, sure, they're destroying it. The problem is that in the process, very often, they destroy tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to get those air conditioners. So, they are absolutely what they want to do, of course, is burn off any insulation and sell the metal to a dealer. So they prey on wiring any scrap they can get. You know, if you're wondering what
wow,
it would be,
yeah.
the average window AC is probably going to net them $25 in terms of copper.
Yeah, that's small time, but
the
bigger ones they're laying on the ground, on the grass. Those
well,
are
right. Well, and that's why I say the ground
yeah.
systems as well. Yeah, the copper, when copper gets to be pricey, that's exactly what happens. You betcha. All right.
Okay.
Well, good to talk to you. I really appreciate
yeah.
the call. Hopefully, I'll talk to you next
yes,
week.
Yes, I'll keep you posted next week and let you know if I hear anything from Publix.
I'm counting on it. Thanks.
And checking up on Teresa, too, from the hospital, too.
Yes, yes. That's the one I'm hoping for.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Okay,
all
thank
right,
you. Have
so
a good weekend.
You yeah. too. On that note, I'll find out what my my transmitter site in Globe is doing and be back to you right after the news on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, yes, the Cazenus Cats Flying Singing Orchestral Circus and all that with Joey Levine on Quick Joey Small. So 888-876-5593. I'm still looking for Mark Katowski, and I'm not sure. There was an interview with him a while ago, but I'm not 100% sure that I can actually hear that. So assuming that that interview wasn't 25 years ago, I would assume that he's still with us. But I don't know. All right, looking. And so, let's see, here's one. Bubblegum music legend. Well, let's see, it says, join Mark as he discusses. When did he discuss it? That's what we want to find out. I don't know. I can read more, they say. Yeah, right. It'll be one of those sites that as long as you join it or something, but let's see when this is. I don't know. I'll do that on my time, and we'll try to find out. But in the meantime, things that matter if you're into those law of abundance checks. The new moon is tomorrow. That's right, Friday. Friday, July 5th, just before 6 o'clock Central, 5:57 p.m. to be exact. So if you are into writing the law of abundance checks, do it just before 6 o'clock tomorrow. And if you don't know what we're talking about, well, the deal is just go to MaryAnnWinkowski.com. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. I've also been trying to find out about Jim Jacobs. I said I would when Sam from Gurney called of Grease fame. And I pick him up as recent as 2 years ago in the San Diego area, but haven't found anything since. So I don't know, but I'll keep looking. Yeah, all I need now is someone to ask what happened to Dozy, of Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick, and Titch. No, I don't know. And I don't know that I care. 888-876-5593. We are live on Independence Day, and so hopefully keeping you company. And if you want to keep me company, I hope you in fact will call. We've got Leah in Marcus Hook. So Leah, welcome back. Let's find our magic twanger here to WGN Radio. How's it going, Leah?
Good. How's it going with you?
Well, better now. Oh, man, I'll tell you. When I looked at that temperature at 7:30 and my FM transmitter site was at 118 degrees, I know. And but the big thing is my morning man was having a hissy fit, and I don't blame him because he had been promoting the fireworks. We choreographed the fireworks display, and he was promoting that we choreograph it and be listening, and he'd been doing this for weeks. And he said, "I will never promote anything on this radio station ever again." You know, and I'm like, I don't blame you. And somehow I managed to get it to work. So I'm not sure what happened to do it, but we're back where we should be.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, we spent the day hanging out at Albert's brother's house, who has a pool, and
good.
The whole family was there. Albert's whole family,
good.
And I mean the whole extended family. Everybody came.
Good.
And it was great. All the kids, and we were in. I was in the pool like the whole day, probably, and we had a cookout and, you know, all the things that go with it. And I could barely chew anything, though. I could, I have to, like, break things off with my fingers and eat it. And can't, because I can't bite anything, you know?
Right. Exactly.
So, so it was hard, but I got through it.
Good.
I ate the deviled eggs. That, that
yes.
was easy.
Good. That's good.
And the cupcakes, those were easy. But we had a good time, and I just wanted to wish you and all your listeners a happy 4th of July.
Yes, you too.
And I was disheartened to see on the news when we came home the protests in Philadelphia, the Palestinian supporters burning American flags in the street in Philadelphia. Yeah. On the 4th of July.
Yeah. You know that I'm not going to go there on the show because we never do, but it is very disheartening.
I know.
Very
it was
disheartening
to see.
It is disheartening on a lot of facts and a lot of ways. And, of course, putting it in the big picture, I think we have a lot of people who don't understand the big picture. That's where
I mean, if we went over to one of these countries and tried to burn their flag on their Independence Day, I mean, we'd be in jail.
Well, that's what makes us unique. But, you know, I just, like I say, I won't go there. It's sad. So,
yeah. It's just sad. And they did make a bunch of arrests, so that's good. But, and then we watched The Patriot, which is never, I mean, for years now, I've been saying they should play The Patriot with Mel Gibson on Independence Day because that's what it's about. And they never do, but today they played it. So when we got home after the news, we watched The Patriot. So that was perfect.
Yes.
You've never seen it, I know.
No.
But you know of it, right?
Well, heard of it. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, it's a perfect. I mean, it's about the fight for independence. It's about that whole war.
Yeah.
And it's a great, great movie.
Well, good. So it was a good day all the way around.
It was a good day all the way around, and I just wanted to, I hope everybody had a good day. And we watched fireworks. We watched the Capitol 4th.
All right.
That's the one we like because, you know, the other one, the one on PBS, the Capitol 4th, do you ever watch that?
No.
Oh, okay, because that's the one that they don't have the horrible rap music and stuff, you know. They just have the, I think the Army choir or the Army chorus and the Marine band or whatever. And then they have some current music, but not rap music or anything, you know, or pop music. But they had a concert pianist and stuff. And then they show the fireworks from the Capitol.
Good.
So that was nice.
Yeah.
That's all I have to report.
All right. Well, good to hear from you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate it. All right.
Bye.
So, I had to do a convention over 4th of July in D.C. In fact, 1984, now that I think about it, my God, it was 40 years ago right now, at the L'Enfant Plaza Hotel. Oh, man, oh, man. It was one of those things where Billboard had a due bill, and if they didn't spend it with the hotel chain, which was Lowe's, they would have lost the money. And so they said, you're going to have a radio convention. I'm like, just what I've always wanted. And I did. And that was the L'Enfant Plaza. And I remember because the hotel was famous because that's where DeLorean made his drug deals, you know, when he had the motor company and all that untoward stuff. And I wasn't paying much attention to that, but you know me. So they asked, you know, what I would like in my room since I was, you know, the head of the convention, and they meant like booze and stuff. I said, all I want is a lot of Coke. I need a lot of Coke. And of course, they don't understand. I'm thinking of this Coca-Cola made from Atlanta, right? And so it was a while before we were on the same page as to what I was asking for. And, you know, but finally, when I said glass bottles chilled to 34 degrees, and then they started to get it. But at first there, I think they literally thought, she's asking for drugs. No, not hardly. And that was a weird hotel, too. It was only a four-floor hotel, but it is on top of, like, offices. So anyway, it was an interesting convention all the way around, and they did get me a lot of Coca-Cola, which was nice, and a couple L'Enfant robes, too, which I still have somewhere. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. We'll get to Jim and Drexel Hill coming up on WGN Radio.
If I had met you yesterday, I might have passed you by. But I can't ignore the zodiac and all the stars in the sky. My horoscope said to be careful today. The girl of my dreams would be coming my way. Until you passed by, none had taken my eye. My horoscope told me of you. It said to beware, you might never submit to my hasty offer, and I must admit, you are a bit shy, but darling, look at the sky. My horoscope told me of you. When you see those twinkling stars above, can there be any doubt? They all say you are the only one that I couldn't live without. The moon is in favor and Venus is too. There's no better time for our first rendezvous. So what do you say? The sky is our Milky Way and astrology is our Waterloo. 'Cause my horoscope told me of you.
WGN Radio, I'm Robbie James. That's Frank Bishop, and yeah, pay for play, basically. It's one of those little record labels where you kind of pay to be pressed on it, and that was Caravel out of Northern Florida, actually, or Central Florida. And anyway, Frank Bishop was sort of a lounge lizard in the mid-60s and came up with my horoscope, and I actually had that on the computer. I wasn't planning to play it, truth be known, but when I was talking about Mercury retrograde last night, and and then when Brett said, you're back, I just hit the first thing I saw, and it happened to be Frank Bishop. Rest in peace, Frank. He's no longer with us. I actually tried to track this guy down a few years ago because I wondered what happened to, like, there was another label down in South Florida, Great World of Sound, where you know, you paid to be on it. And I saved some of them because they were so bad, I knew that when it came to it, no one would believe they were this bad. So they actually, as far as I was concerned, they weren't songs, they were exemplars. Yes, that's right. Yes, I show you the evidence of, type thing. And, yeah, Frank sort of fell into that category to one degree or another, but I think he was in Virginia somewhere when he passed away, but yeah, did all the lounges for a while. 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh, and oh no, Bonnie in Butternut, yes, who brings us cicada information and more, said she's in the hospital. Bonnie, what's up?
Well, I ended up with, finding out that I had AFib and ended up coming over to the emergency room in Minocqua because I'm about 50 miles from Minocqua up here in Butternut. And that was 2 days ago, and I'm still here. And
good.
So they're just trying to get me back into sinus rhythm and
right.
Right. And they said, you know, it doesn't necessarily, some people live with that all the time. It never goes back. And, of course, never being on a blood thinner, that was the first thing that they started. So I just thinking, how do you, I guess I'm just thinking, how do you manage that? Well, how do you know? I mean,
well, you feel it for one thing, but here obviously you had some symptoms, but it can be serious. That's not to say it's not like a death sentence or anything like that. There's no absolute here, but the reason that they put you on the blood thinners is the first thing they're worried about is they don't want a stroke, and they're worried about ischemic strokes from it. And so they put you on blood thinners, and then they do try to regulate it. Sometimes they can try to shock the heart back into a regular rhythm and all that. But what's happening is, you know, you got four chambers in your heart, and the lower chambers, of course, are the ventricles. Your upper chambers, the atria, that's where we're talking here. They don't beat in coordination with each other. And so you can get everything from palpitations to shortness of breath. You know, you might have had some fatigue. So you're absolutely where you belong until they decide how they're going to treat it. Now, it's been a couple days. Have you started to level off?
Yes, basically. And I first of all, it all started, well, I did get a new blood pressure machine because we do that every day on a normal basis. Mm-hmm. And but it's one of these new ones where we put your iPhone on there, and it gives you an EKG. I mean, not
It tells you your pulse and whether you're beating in rhythm and all those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah, and on Tuesday night, while I was listening to you, I didn't feel so good, and I went and I did it, and it came back, and it's in big red letters. It said AFib.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, what? So I did take an aspirin, because I've always thought, well, that's what you were supposed to do. And didn't do any more overnight.
Right.
And the next morning, Wednesday morning, I didn't feel any better, did it again, and of course it came up with AFib, came right over here to the hospital.
Good.
And here I am.
Good.
And yes, the numbers have come down, and they're just waiting for it to correct by itself.
Right.
And
right.
Then, of course, like everything else, it's always on a weekend or a holiday, so they're just conversing with a cardiologist over here, and it's the hospital doctor that's really in charge right now, and we will see, and I will be going to a cardiologist if this, you know, I guess for the rest of my days.
You will be going to a cardiologist regardless, and a good one, hopefully, but, you know, the thing is, it may last this way as long as a week and then resolve, and then some people have it where symptoms come and go. In other words, it isn't always persistent. So there's so many variations of this. They want to make sure you're not going to throw a clot and all the other things that could be involved with it, so you're absolutely in the right place. The good news is that AFib is not unknown. It's a very well-known thing, and so it's not one of those arcane things where what are they going to do about it? There's there's pretty much protocol, and I don't want to buy any trouble to think that it is going to be long-term, but there's many different ways to approach it depending on what you wind up having. But I'm glad that you are being monitored. Because that way, you know, if you go into an uncontrolled stage, they can do something about that.
Yeah.
So now you mentioned you take your blood pressure. Are you on blood pressure medicine?
Yes, I have been for many, many years.
What are you taking?
Yes.
What kind?
Oh, you know what? At this point, I don't even know unless I've been on, after the first of this, I was on the same one for many years.
Uh-huh.
And the beginning of this year, there was a couple of them. I was on a beta blocker and another one. And
well, it might have been a calcium channel blocker, but what I'm saying is there. If that's a contributor, and your doctors would know that, I wouldn't, but there are so many different types, whether it's, you know, the good old diuretics or just going back to the angiotensin receptors,
I'm on a diuretic also.
All right, yeah, well, most people, a little dose of hydrochlorothiazide can never hurt type thing. So, yeah, but there's vasodilators, and, you know, I'm not a fan of ACE inhibitors, but they give a lot of that. There's so many that's where your doctors are aware of that, and I'm sure they're going to put that into the mix, too.
Well, and they've changed so many because they're at the beginning of this year, which is now 6 months away. There were some blood pressure medicines that were not available. They were a
shortage. You're so right. Hang on a minute. Stay where you are. Don't go away. We'll be right back right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Well, you woke me from a dream about you, just to say that you were leaving. I'm sleepy, but I thought that you said our love that will last forever is ended. Well, before you walk out of my life, would you be especially quiet? And don't you let my heart know that you're leaving. Don't you say another word about it, darling. Don't you let my see you writing something down and leaving it on the dresser. The tears in your eyes look a lot like mine, but I guess it's all for the better. Well, before we say our last goodbye, baby, won't you hold me just one more time? And don't you let my heart know you're leaving. Don't you say another word about it, darling. Don't you let my heart hear your footsteps walking out the door of my hopes and dreams. And don't you let my heart know that you're leaving. Don't you say another word about
it, darling. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Gene Cotton. Yeah, and if you used to like to listen to the pop adult stations in the 70s, man, he was a hit. In fact, Before My Heart Finds Out, which is 1977 on EMI, that was a top five adult contemporary hit, just really big nationally. Not as big in the UK, but interestingly, he covered Bobby Goldsboro's Me and the Elephants and did very well in the UK with that. In fact, it became his biggest hit there. But he's originally from Columbus, Ohio. And he had moved to Nashville, down to Williamson County and all that, Leaper's Fork, and said, it was nice and idyllic. Well, until the proposed construction of the loop, one of the loops, 840 in this case. And he can be credited with substantially delaying the completion. Yeah, he didn't win. He did get a partial redesign of one section, but, oh, man, that was his cost celeb literally for years. I mean, it was just... just fixated, to say the least. And then he ran for a seat in the Tennessee House of Representatives. I was hoping he'd win, and he didn't. But then again, only 13% of registered voters casted a ballot either way. He was campaigning on strong oppositions to proposals for state income tax. Don't blame him, but Tennessee does have a state income tax, just not on earned income. A lot of people do not understand that. They think, oh, no state income tax. Well, there isn't from your earned income from your job. But if you've got investments, oh, there is. Absolutely there is. 888-876-5593. Back to Bonnie in Butternut. And so now, apart from, of course, the absolute shock of being where you are, and nobody likes being in the hospital, but overall, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, finally.
Oh, yay. That's excellent.
You know, it wasn't dizzy, but I had this lightheadedness. Mm-hmm. And of course, I have to say I was a little afraid.
Of course.
But I felt as though I was getting good care, and right. As you said, I was at the right place. So that's all I could ask for at that time. So
absolutely.
I just have to put it in somebody else's hands now and pray for the best.
Yeah, and I have a feeling they're going to work it out. And, you know, that reason I asked you were on blood pressure medicine, sometimes just readjusting those will be all you need to do. And so they're gonna look at all of that and everything else, and you know, hopefully it'll never happen again, or at least if it does, hopefully it's very, very sporadic. But
and then, you know, never being on a blood thinner, this is a whole new game for me.
Well,
I mean, from what I've understood, that there are even some green vegetables that you can't even eat, and so on and so forth.
Well,
so it's going to be a learning in process, I guess.
You're probably not going to be on the blood thinners indefinitely. Again, what they're concerned about is because there's a propensity for a clot, and then the clot can move to the brain, and that's a stroke, they want to make sure that you're not going to throw a clot. And they've got a number of things. You know, everybody who hears about that hears about coumadin and says, "Oh my God, it's rat poison." Well, it is, but there's a number of other things as well. And aspirin, actually, you probably were inspired to take that because that will thin your blood, no doubt about it. But yeah, there is a question at this point if they're giving you blood thinners, you don't want to take aspirin because you don't want to mix things together like that. But I don't think you're going to be on it forever.
Really?
No.
I thought once you go on them, and I always thought that, you know, they have a hard time adjusting sometimes.
I don't think, you know, obviously I'm about as far from a doctor as anyone could get, so I'm just a disc jockey who talks too much. But that said, I think that it does not mean that you have to be on this indefinitely. I would think that they're going to look strongly at the various blood pressure drugs you're on, because they too can have a real effect on controlling, as well as some that will, you know, help cause it. There are some that will really help control that as well. So at this point, though, I think it's early enough that we can say that everything's on the table, and we have no reason to suspect that you're going to be on anything forever.
Well, thank you for the encouragement, and
Absolutely.
This is what I needed to hear, and it's nice to hear it in layman language, even though I'm taking notes and trying to have my husband's ears here also.
Right.
And asking the doctors for, please write that down, and
right.
you know, and so on and so forth. So that's how it is.
No, absolutely. And they have you on a heart monitor, so they're looking at this nonstop. And even after you're out and home and all that, they can give you a Holter monitor or things where you can monitor your heart as well, if need be. But for many people, it is not something that becomes chronic and long-term. And, you know, when it does, there's things that can be done, like even as far as ablation, and I don't think you'd necessarily ever need that. But they have things like that that can smooth out irregularities. So there's so many, but this is so common, which is great for you, Bonnie, because that means wherever you are, they know about this. It's not unknown to them.
Well,
so
that's true.
Yeah, I think you're going to be fine. I hope so anyway, but I hope you're going to keep me posted.
I will. And thank you for listening to me.
Absolutely. I'm glad you called. Sleep well. Not that that's easy in a hospital.
Well, I got to at least stay awake for another hour to hear the end of your show.
So. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, yeah, the scariest things about things like AFib is that they're scary, especially if you've never had it. It's like, what? You know? And, yeah, so that part. And, of course, you know how it is, especially if it's in the middle of the night. Your mind will go to places that, man, I tell you what. And, you know, little things can become monumental. And I've mentioned this story many times, that once while John was away, I took something that was prescribed for me, and I had a very bad reaction to it. And I was home alone. And so I make the mistake of consulting Dr. Google. And I'm reading online, and I'm reading online. And with each sentence, I'm getting, you know, more hyperventilating. And it's because until I got to the part about dull coat and realized it was veterinary medicine. And so at that point, I had to laugh because I thought, you see how you can talk yourself into anything? I'm not even panting. So we've got Donna in Oak Lawn. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Raleigh, I'm calling to let you know that you are a genius.
Oh, no.
I know John wasn't happy to hear me say it, but I just had to call you and let you know blood thinning agents are a lot of times prescribed while people are in the hospital,
right?
Because they're in the bed.
Right, of course.
And they're not running around like they do in normal life.
Right.
And if you're sedentary and in bed, a lot of times you throw clots.
You can.
If you're not on a blood thinner. So as soon as she gets up and about and out of the hospital, she won't be on a blood thinner anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't ask what she was taking, but she didn't mention that she was annoyed by shots in the stomach. So I thought, well, she's not getting the heavy stuff there.
She's on heparin.
Yeah, right. And so I think she'll be fine. But yeah, the combination of until they know why she has AFib and that, like you say, good point, that you're sedentary when you're lying in bed, you don't want to take a chance on that. So, of course.
And, you know, they do that prophylactically for a lot of patients while they're in the hospital.
Yes.
Because they're not running around like they usually do in normal life.
Right, absolutely. Well, same thing like when they talk about it, if you're on real long plane flights and all that, it's good to keep in mind. Get up and go to the bathroom several times because you shouldn't remain that sedentary for hours and hours.
Yeah, like I said, you're a genius.
No, you've never seen me in the kitchen. So,
well, you don't have to be a genius to cook. Sometimes not cooking is a genius.
Well, then I perfected it. All right. Thanks.
You have a very lovely
you too.
Fourth.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And Jim is in Drexel Hill. How's it going, Jim?
Okay. You mentioned Joey Levine, right?
Yes.
Now, he also did the Archies, and there was another
no,
guy
no,
named
Tony. Wait, are you sure? I know Ron Dante did the Archies. Did he do the Archies with Ron Dante?
Oh, you said it was Ron Dante?
Yeah, Ron Dante did the Archies.
Oh, I thought it was Joey Levine. Okay.
Yeah, but, well, no, it's now what I'm looking up to see, did Joey Levine do any of that? Because, you know, these are all studio
I'm sorry,
things.
I thought Joey Levine did the Archies.
Well, he might have been in it. I'm going to try to look, but it was definitely Ron Dante. But let me see.
You're probably right, yeah, because there's been a big void in the music industry ever since the Archies broke up.
yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. It probably was Ron Dante.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. And so, and there were...
Okay, so that's streets. Okay, there's another guy, Tony Burrows. He did
Oh, yeah, now we're talking British, but yes, of course he did.
Staircase and all that. Did these guys make any money from these songs?
If they wrote them, they made a little bit of money, yes. The key was, and you mentioned Tony Burrows, you know, that's like Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes and United We Stand,
right.
And My Baby Loves Lovin', and Gimme That Ding, that was my favorite by him, Gimme That Ding, and First Class, too, or Beach Baby, yeah. So,
or Beach Baby, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so...
Now, Every Day's a New Day was... One I remember from
yeah, so I think the key with that is to find out if he wrote them.
Okay, now the other question I have is, did they start these groups, or did somebody else start them, and they were just called in, because they were all fake groups, right?
Well, they were studio musicians, but it's a different story for each one of them, to say the, say the least. Tony Burrows was a session musician. And so, you know, it put him in a good position. He was recording a lot of this stuff to be there. So, you know, did he come up with the idea, say, of the Pipkins? I don't know, but he was certainly who they used. You know, so they're just studio guys.
So these people made up these groups and then called these guys in to sing.
Well, it depends. Like you mentioned, like First Class, that was Beach Baby, Beach Baby.
Yeah.
That was actually John Carter. And John Carter was a singer and a songwriter in the UK. And so he was the one who hired Tony Burrows and Chas Mills and basically some other people. And in some case, he would hire them to work out the song itself. In other cases, he'd hire them just to do the session work. So it could be a variety of things. You know, Carter wrote Beach Baby. He had a co-writer, but it wasn't Tony Burrows. But in any event, you know, any machination you can imagine is how that would happen.
So these guys that sang, they might not have made any money from the song.
Well, not necessarily very much. That's for darn sure. But you know,
we'll just say Beach Baby. Well, Tony Burrows make money from that?
Well, how much? Well, I'd have to look at the contract.
Don't worry about it.
But I mean, yeah, I probably couldn't find it. But what I'm saying is that it would depend on the contract. There would be nothing that would say that he had to get more than a session fee. But now,
oh, Okay, so the session
fee. You're going to get a session fee. And, you know, sadly, a lot of times, the guy who's or gal who's just getting a session fee makes the records. One of my favorite examples of that was Sonny and Cher, The Beat Goes On. And I think that anytime you hear The Beat Goes On, what made that record a hit was that bass line. And that bass line was just Carole Kay sitting there fooling around. So she got her session fee. That was it. And you know, of course, they made those movies, which I haven't seen, but those documentaries about the Motown session guys and, Standing in the Shadow of Motown or whatever. And many of those, it was their licks that made those records happen. All they got was their session fees. And in some places, if they were non-union, it was less than their session fees. You know, if you're in New York, LA, Nashville, the musicians union is your best friend, because the musicians union will get you paid and also it'll go into your pension and welfare, which is really nice. But like Ron Dante, when you mentioned, he was, the lead singer of, quote unquote, the Archies. I would assume that there might have been some TV work on that as well. And so he would have been, like he did the theme song for Silver Spoons. You get paid for that as far as that is. But originally, I think the first time we all knew Ron Dante was in the Detergents, the group that did the parody of Leader of the Pack, Leader of the Laundromat. But what's interesting is that everybody always says, oh, Ron Dante. Yeah, well, he wasn't there that day. He was not on that recording, but he was in that group. The Archies, of course, he worked with Jeff Berry on that. And of course, you know, Jeff Berry, and you're talking about Don Kirshner and all that. And then, you get to the Cufflinks. And there again, the Detergents, Paul Vance and Lee Pockris, the writers, were involved with that, so they got him into the Cufflinks. You can see we can go on and on how that happens. They certainly make a living. And, of course, Ron Dante produced a lot of the Barry Manilow stuff. So, probably got some good money as a producer for the stuff that's old.
Wow, I didn't know that. Ron Dante, he was the Archie guy. Yeah, okay. So, again, Tony Burrow singing Every Day's a New Day, he might not have gotten any money from that, or he might have got some money.
Well, what he would have gotten is the session fee.
Session fee, oh, okay.
So whatever that was, you know, if that was $100 an hour or whatever at the time, then that's what he got. Now, if he was also involved in writing it or producing it, of course, writing it, that's sacrosanct. I mean, those royalties are set if you write it. But if it's anything else, it's contractual.
Okay.
You know what? If they want you bad enough, you can hold them up for a lot of money. And, so what did he get for Edison Lighthouse? For Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes? I would assume he got a session fee.
Okay, yeah, I remember that. Okay, well, that's interesting. All right, well, you answered my question. I'm sorry to bother you.
No, always. Happy to hear from you.
I was really curious about that because I just heard Every Day's a New Day the other day. I thought, that guy's got a pretty good voice. I wonder if he made anything for him.
What you'll find out is very often, if you really scratch the surface, you'll find out that they also did a lot of background vocals on records, but they got studio fees for, but they weren't credited, you know, the session fees they'd get. So it's not unusual that someone's doing background vocals, or a lot of people, and a lot of famous people. Like years later, Leslie Gore used to do backup vocals all the time in sessions and made session money that way. So you get a lot of that. And also, when you're in that situation, you're going to meet other people, and chances are maybe you'll get, a TV theme or something like that, or if you're lucky, maybe you're singing commercials, because if you write them, there can be good money in that.
Okay, so the guy that wrote Every Day's a New Day, did he decide, I want to have Tony Burrow sing that song?
Okay, that's an interesting question. Here's the way it works legally. Now, firstly, the writer has to have a publisher. Now, the writer may be the publisher, but whoever the publisher is, whether it's the writer or a publishing company, they get the first right. And what that means is before the song is ever recorded, they can decide who it's going to. And nobody else can touch it. But once the song is recorded at all, then anybody can have it. They just have to pay the fees. But the first right, that is the publisher's domain. And obviously, hopefully, the writer's working with a publisher where it's a good collaboration, or maybe the writer is the publisher. And then, yes, that person has absolute say over who does it first. but not
who
after that.
The song first,
right?
Oh, wow.
But when you're talking about, you know, to really look at your question, when you're talking about how would that come about, how Tony Burrows would be hired, almost always it's going to be the producer who's deciding on something like that.
Okay.
You know, just like the producer will pick his studio musicians, will pick his background vocalists. And it's not unusual in most markets, Nashville, New York, L.A., where there will be a group of singers, four or five gals, who will be together, like the Ron Hicklin singers or whatever, where they appear in these sessions as all of them. And, you know, you get your background from the Ron Hicklin singers. You could put it together yourself, but there's no reason for you to.
So they have a choice of who they're going to pick to sing the song.
You absolutely. Course, the person singing it has to decide if they're singing it.
Right. Okay.
You know, and obviously, if Tony Burrows were a household name, you know, if he were as big as, say, Paul Anka or something, he would be calling some shots. He'd be saying, "I'm not singing that. You're going to give me money," you know, or whatever.
They'd call him, and he'd jump on it.
Well, right.
Walter Nemeth.
Oh, John says I have to do Walter right now, and he's right. Talk to you later. Okay, bye.
All right.
Yes, that's right. It is. Everything stops for Walter, don't you know? That's right, because it is time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. That's Ray Charles. I know. Well, after the fact now, as it is officially Central Time, July 5th. But nonetheless, that's the official audio of America the Beautiful from Ray Charles. It came from his box set a while ago, and just a fine rendition to it. I know that's what Johnny D wanted to hear, so now you have.
Yes, Wally. It's too bad I was on the, what do you call that, VoIP or something, a voiceover,
What are you trying to say?
Everything gets busted up.
Oh.
Everything gets busted up. I was hearing a song, but it was all choppy. You know?
I don't know what to tell you about that. But, you know, the good thing
is... What do you call that?
By the way, the good thing is that you can hear it anytime you want. You know that, because it's definitely online.
Oh, yeah. Sure I could.
So, good enough.
But I'm so glad that I requested it, because it's very appropriate.
Yes.
And you're still a great American, even though it's after the 4th of July.
Well, that's true, it is. But yes, thank you for that. All right, so what's up?
I don't know. He told me. I called because I told John. I said, Josh told me to call him back earlier tonight.
Oh, I see. I see.
Let me say this. You were talking with Eduardo about Copper?
Yes.
Okay. And it brought to mind a joke. And I've been debating with myself if I should tell it or not. Because it's just a joke.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I'm going to tell it anyhow. I hope, you know, and I don't mean to, you know, it's a joke. Right? So here was it is. You know how copper wire was invented?
Okay, let's hear it.
Two Jews fighting over a penny.
Oh, please. All right, no, no, no. All right.
No, well, I did it anyhow because it's a joke.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So, yeah, there's no shortage of ethnic jokes of every variety.
No, no shortage, no shortage.
All right.
I'm sure you probably know some ones you could say about everybody, you know.
Well, so...
That's like that, what's his name? Don Rickles? What was his name?
Yes, that was Don Rickles, who certainly made fun of himself as well as everybody else and did a wonderful job
about it. Everybody.
And the reason that everybody accepted that from him, it was because he was just genuinely such a nice guy, truly. He was...
a nice guy.
Off the air, people just loved him. Anyway, Copper, by the way, was at its all-time high in... really, I think it eclipsed what it ever was, because before we were saying copper was its all-time high 56 years ago, like $5.19 an ounce, and it was $5.20 an ounce last month, well, in May. So it's high.
Well, you don't mess with copper. You're a gold person, right?
No, I care an awful lot about copper because it's used in so much of what I do. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, I care dramatically if I'm replacing part of a ground system or if I'm grounding something with copper straps and stuff. Yes, I care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what was it, the copper age? Yeah, there was a copper age, wasn't there?
Well, I'm sure there was everything, you know, but
there was.
Well, you would know because after all, you're Mr. Hominin, and the copper age was wasn't that the link between stone tool farms and metal civilizations?
Right. So that was the first
copper then bronze.
Metal that they did after the stone age.
Right, and then they went into bronze.
Right, but they needed tin for that.
So.
Oh, no, that was the Iron Age.
Right.
But anyhow, there's all kinds of copper around here, around the Great Lakes, around here. Right?
Well, sure.
You know. Yeah, a lot of copper. But anyhow, so you said call me back tomorrow, and the thing I was talking about was the quote by Thoreau.
Oh, right.
Most men, you said it was masses of men.
No, I didn't. Okay. It's neither of those, by the way. The Quiet Desperation quote, and it's one of the most often misquoted phrases ever. The mass of men led lives of quiet desperation, basically. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation.
Mass of men.
Yeah.
I like it when it says most men live
lives
of quiet desperation. Because, you know, like I said, the first time I'd seen that quote, I was like about 20, and I went into a bar, like a neighborhood bar, you know, back home. And it was a real quiet bar, you know, guys go in there, just sit there and drink, you know?
Yeah.
No, like, part of bands or nothing like that. And most guys just sit there staring out in his face, you know what I mean? And, like, probably thinking about being desperate. You know what I mean?
Well, if we're talking about the human condition, and I've said this often, there are only two words you don't want to die with on your lips, and those words are what if. And that's why I think most people who are, and, you know, it's getting spiritual for God's sakes, but most people who are living lives of quiet desperation are people who are not acting on many of the things that they would like to do with their lives, and they give themselves a lot of reasons why they can't. But
these are just mill workers.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Nobody's just in anything. You can be a mill worker, but that doesn't mean that you can't go for whatever your dreams are. Most people, though, don't go for their dreams. and they'll tell them stuff that they can't. And they can't because of this, that, or the other thing. But the reality is, oh, yes, they could have if they really chose to do so.
Yeah, well, that's why most men live lives
of well, and there you have it. And, you know, I say the earth is like a giant shopping mall where nothing's ever on sale, but it always has a price, and rarely is the price financial. So you can have anything you want if you're willing to pay the price. But the problem is most people want to shoplift in the Mall of Life, and they want the goodies without having to pay the ticket. And you can't do that. That leads to misery.
Well, you're like a philosopher or something.
No, I'm just, I guess when I was a kid, I used to, grew up in Los Angeles and in Miami Beach, and I'd look at those people in Miami.
That's too bad.
Yeah, right, you're right. I'd look at those people in Miami Beach staring out at the ocean, and that was what I said. The look in their eyes, that was the what-if look. And I never heard anybody talk about that they were upset over something they did. It was always they were upset over the things they didn't do. And they always had a reason for that. And so I determined at a very young age that there was nothing that I couldn't do if I wanted to do it, and I'd do it. You know, and there were a lot of things I would lose along the way, but I'd do it.
Yeah, girl.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I've lived in 32 cities.
Yeah, you know? I was wondering.
So, yeah.
I was wondering. You were talking about, I don't know, with one of the more previous calls about money or something in the music business or something. Yeah, when they get paid $100 for a studio.
When you're doing session work, when you're paid for the session, yeah.
Session. So, you know, I was thinking money, and then I was thinking, I'm going to ask you this anyhow. So take, for example, if you had a breakdown, say, your salary to an hourly wage, like what would you be making, about like $2,500 an hour?
On everything I do, what would I be making?
Yeah, hourly.
Yeah, and so I got to include the revenue that comes from cell towers and the revenue that comes from broadcasting and the radio.
You know, I don't know. Do however you want. But I'm just thinking
it's
about $2,000 an hour.
No. It's nowhere in the four figures. It is nowhere in the four figures. Well, now, but now the other thing is, well, you know, you really can't answer that question unless we decide how many hours I'm working a week. And if you decide I'm working a 40-hour work week, you know, that's a very different figure than if you decide I'm working an 8-hour work week or an 80-hour work week. So you'd have to first determine.
Well, here on WGN, you're going, 12 hours.
Well, okay, so now, wait a minute. So you're talking about 3 hours on the air. You don't think this show happens just on the air. I mean, I've got to prepare for it in some way. Like when we do Monday Night Trivia.
That woman does it for you.
Well, Carol is wonderful. I pay her. I couldn't live without her.
Oh.
So absolutely. And I don't pay her enough. But and if she wants a raise, she can have one. But that said,
there you go. Go for it, Ken.
Yeah, right. I certainly certainly have to put time into it as well. You know, years ago when WABC was going all talk and they asked Dan Ingram if he'd be interested, he kind of laughed and he said, "Are you kidding me? For every hour on the air doing talk, I'd have to spend an hour off the air to prepare. There's no way you'd pay me that kind of money." So, and he was right, by the way. So,
You guys just winged it.
Well, you know, you can't. I mean, I probably do more than I should, embarrassingly, but even so, you don't just come in and sit down. You can't.
So, well, he does.
Oh, no, he doesn't. Oh, no, he doesn't. That I absolutely, absolutely guarantee you he doesn't. So, there's all sorts of variables, but, you know, in the scheme of things, it doesn't matter. There is enough coming in that I don't worry about what I'm eating. And, you know, by my yardstick, I don't worry if there's a roof over my head. I don't worry if I have transportation. I don't worry about what food costs. So what do I care? That's wealthy enough for me.
There you go. Yeah, that's cool.
You know, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, it's exactly like that. So, and bottom line is, if you can't breathe, nothing on earth matters until you breathe. You know, and the list goes from there.
Oh,
and,
breathing's important.
Yeah, it's number one with a bullet. Yes, breathing it is. And you know, then you'll get into drinking water, perhaps. And I mean, the initially the lists are pretty finite. That we all have to, you know, breathe. We all have to sleep. We all have to eat. We all have to drink water. And that kind of thing. But after that, everybody's need hierarchy is different. And mine is fairly minimal. I've never aspired to do things that would cost a lot of money, and not because they would cost a lot of money, just I wasn't interested. Now, that said, believe me, over the years, when I could get away with not working, I wouldn't work. You know, the bottom line is, if a job ended because they got a new program director, the station changed formats or whatever, I'd be like, yes, I get time off. And depending upon how much I had in reserve, you know, I might get in the car and drive to Alaska. I did that on more than one occasion. And so, I remember there was a general manager who was so perplexed when he said, I have bad news for you. And I said, oh, that's great. And the weather's perfect. I'm going to Alaska right now. And I left the next day. But that only works as long as you can still pay the bills. Like I say, my needs are fairly minimal, and I don't want for very expensive things. Now, when I was younger, I always wanted Corvettes. Well, I saved up my money and I bought Corvettes, but I paid cash. I didn't get payments or anything like that. Now, John looked at the new Corvettes today because they are kind of nice, and I said, that's $77,000. I'm not interested. And I'm really
not.
Not
a little bit? I thought they were more than that.
No. It didn't interest me. I just looked at that, you know, the old price is what you pay, value is what you get. And I thought, at this stage of my life, no, there's no car, $77,000, that I feel I want to be driving. Could I get one? Yeah, I guess I could. But would I get one? Nope. And so, you know, but there are people who do live high on the hog, who like the quote-unquote finer things of life. You know, I don't really care about expensive jewelry or clothes or any of those things.
How did that song go?
Now, of course,
I
care about records, but there again, I am not paying outrageous amount of money for records. I'm just not. But if they're fairly inexpensive, yeah, I'm still buying 45s. You betcha.
Well, okay, Raleigh, knock yourself out on that. Yeah. And thank you for taking my
Glad
call.
Glad you did. Always good to hear from you. Thanks, Johnny D.
All right.
Bye-bye. So, good deal. 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. But yeah, I do think all unhappiness comes from trying to shoplift in the mall of life. If you're willing to pay the price, go for your dreams. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Larry Hanley. Actually, it's a new beats with Larry Hanley singing lead. He would have turned 87 over the weekend. It's from Odessa, and he was a great songwriter. And actually, most of the songs he wrote I didn't like at all, but boy, were they big sellers, like Wind Beneath My Wings. That was him. But he also wrote Lizzie and the Rainmen for Tanya Tucker, which I always liked, but a number of other big ones as well. But he was in the new beats, obviously, and he was a good friend of Bobby Goldsboro, and in fact, it was Don Henley who convinced him to sing Honey. I know, you're saying, do you want to hold a grudge? But it certainly was a big hit for him. And, of course, Bread and Butter has been used in countless commercials over the years and films and stuff like that. So there was money in that, but sadly, it's been a while since he's gotten to reap it, since he's been dead almost 10 years now. So it was not pretty either. It was Lewy body dementia, so there was Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia, so it was not a pretty end. But boy, he sure gave us some fun for a couple years with the New Beats. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Carl is in Riverside. What's up tonight, Carl?
What's shaking, Raleigh? I'm still my head's still spinning from that last conversation.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, you just have to let it pass by. It'll clear eventually. The skies will clear. Yeah,
you have the patience of a saint. Yes, it goes.
John says, actually, what I don't know how to do is tell time. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are.
You got it.
We'll do the news, and we will be back to Carl and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
Gee whiz, I can't believe that you love me. I can't believe that an angel like you could fall in love with me so tenderly. Gee whiz, why do I thrill when you kiss me? My heart stands still when I'm holding your hand. The feeling is oh, so grand, oh, so grand. How do you talk to an angel? What words should I say? How do you walk with an angel?
Yeah, I'm entertaining myself there, 1958 on Class. Yeah, Leon Renee's wonderful label. And, of course, Gee Whiz, Bob and Earl, and Bob was Bobby Day, who, of course, also in the Hollywood Flames and under Bobby Day did Rockin' Robin and everything else. But, man, when it was Bob and Earl, just sublime. He would have turned 94 this week. Sadly, died in 1990 in Los Angeles. Cancer took him just far too early. But I thought Gee Whiz was just, man, it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda. All right, so we're back to Carl in Riverside. That's your cue.
Yes, yes, you are.
Yes.
Whatever that guy was drinking, I don't want any of it.
Yeah, the after effects could be interesting.
Hey, I'm only kidding. Hey, I didn't call early enough yesterday because I wanted to tell everybody, do not go forth on the 4th or the 5th, for you may not go forth on the 5th. That's what but I didn't call early enough yesterday.
I love that. I like that. Do not go forth on that. That's good. I'll write that out because I'm always looking for things for my news guy in the morning to say, and I'll have him say that next year.
But guess what? Guess what we can do today, though? We can say, do not go forth on the 5th with a 5th, for you may not go forth on the 6th.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's great, though. Yeah. All right. Right, and
okay,
of course...
So what's a good... You know what? Somebody whapped me during a little football in my ear.
Uh-huh.
Have any thoughts on tinnitus before I go to the doctor?
Oh, let me tell you what. And no one can answer this, and John and I suffer from it tremendously. The only thing that I've noticed over many decades is that I think that part of it is an imbalance in the body, because I have noticed with some drugs or whatever, man, it'll get worse. But for the most part, there are so many theories about this and so many supposed instant cures that it's the very unusual and very lucky individual who can get to the bottom of it and do something about it.
Yeah, I heard basically it's or read that it's not curable.
Well,
for the most part.
Because no one has been able to really target a source. And like I say, you hear everything from, including I've heard people with a straight face say that it's aliens trying to talk to us. So, I mean, that's at one end of the spectrum. And then, the other end of the spectrum thinks that it's some type of an inner ear disturbance. And the reality is it's probably in the brain.
I guess mine could be worse, Raleigh, but, I'm in the car, got the radio on, and I'm hearing this kind of aggravating buzzing. I hate it.
Well, okay, you know? when things are totally silent, what do you hear then?
Doesn't seem to be too bad.
All right, but in terms of what you're hearing, is it high-pitched, low-pitched? Is it constant? Does it undulate? Describe it to me.
Best way to describe it is like a bee, like a honeybee. You know, these buzzing sounds.
Okay,
right now, I got it up to my right ear. That's where I got hit, and there doesn't seem to be a problem, but, you know.
Well, there's many things.
I go to the left ear and do a little something-something,
yeah,
the lower pitch, but if you go to the right ear where I got hit, the higher pitch.
It may be related to that, but when you say you're switching ear to ear, are you putting a cell phone directly to your head?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that can be an issue too. And it depends. You know, the idea that it's completely inert is just not true. You're talking about vibrations which can clash with the brain to a greater or lesser degree. The research is out. I'm not saying it causes brain tumors, though anecdotally there have been people over the years that you've really started to wonder. But the idea of all of the interference that we're getting in terms of different frequencies, the brain, remember, you're nothing more than a rate of frequency as well. You know, we earthlings, we're not really a solid. So the idea that other frequencies won't clash with us, yeah, they may. So I would say if I was having those symptoms, the first thing I would do is have a diet of not allowing a cell phone near my ear.
Yeah.
And do that for a while and see, did it make any difference? You know, sometimes it's as simple as even some of these wireless signals. You know, not that 2.4 should be a problem or 5.0, but for some people, they're highly sensitive. Anecdotally, back in the day when they used to be bag phones, I used them all the time. If they were going to cause brain cancer, I'd be dead. And when they were first the TDMA and then CDMA, still, I drove throughout Canada on TDMA without a problem many years ago. But the current frequencies that they're using, never mind, 5G, even looking at LTE and things like that, if I get that phone anywhere near my head within a minute, I'm going to get bad vision. It's just going to happen. And so I learned a while ago, don't keep the phone near you. And that's one of the reasons I don't carry one. But, that was an easy connection to make because I could see it. And it would take under 60 seconds for my vision to be problematic. And it was a weird little headache that came with it.
Raleigh, when I originally got whapped, now if I would have got whapped a little bit higher or lower, it wouldn't have been a big thing. But it happened to be right in the ear. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I went down, and I was on my back. So, I lost my balance.
Sure,
you know.
Sure. Well, you know, when you have ear problems, you will lose your balance. But how old were you at the time?
a few years ago.
Okay, so you were a full fledged adult.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Good. Well, that would be better than if it was a teenage injury.
I'm like, why now? You know,
yeah,
I
right.
don't need this.
Well, no, you don't need it. But I don't know that the tinnitus would be related to it. It may just be coincidental. You know, the idea that there are no coincidences. Yes, there are. It could be a number of things. But pay attention to when you feel it, because it sounds like you're blessed that when it's totally silent, you're not bothered with it. Most people with tinnitus, when it's totally silent, they're scratching themselves off the wall.
Yeah, I heard it can be really bad in some cases.
Yeah, you know, that's where you get the white noise generators and all that kind of stuff, because you don't want to hear yourself think. Carry a diary, and that might be something where, especially if you find out when you're really plagued by it, you may start to see some commonalities.
I have a music question for you.
Uh-oh.
Nothing to be afraid of.
Mm.
If I were to ask you, and I am, what do you prefer? Okay, the song "I'm Your Puppet," I think, right?
I love "I'm Your Puppet."
Do you like the one by those two guys, or the one?
Yeah, James and Bobby. James and Bobby Purify.
Yeah.
Go for James and Bobby
Purify. The Backstop.
Which one do you like? James and Bobby Purify.
I'll take that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No two ways about that. Not even a contest for me.
I like it. I like it. And the words are good, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was it's interesting. I was in Miami when that came out, and the thing that I flagged was that was, for a while, the number one most requested Cuban oldie of the Cuban immigrants. They loved "I'm Your Puppet." I mean, the numbers were astounding to me.
Wow.
So I always think about that.
That song's been running through my head lately, and also, I don't know why, is... Neil Diamond.
No. Yeah.
Brooklyn Roads, for some reason.
Cracklin' Rosie?
Pardon me?
Cracklin' Rosie for Neil Diamond?
No, Brooklyn?
I don't know.
Roads.
Well, I'm pleased that I don't know this song, but I sure know James and Bobby Purify, and I'll be happy to play that for you.
Hey, that'd be great. In Neil Diamond's Brooklyn Roads, I like the way he's reminiscing about his childhood.
It was on Uni. Okay. This was an A-side?
Anyway, that's the deal on that.
Yeah, this is an A-side in 1968. I'm looking at that. I don't know this record. So, what I'm going to do, I guess I have to hear it. I don't know if it's on this computer or not. Most of the Uni stuff would be. So, let me see if it is.
It's kind of wistful. Like I said, he's reminiscing about his growing up.
All right, it is on this computer, so at some point I put this 45 on here, so I don't know, never heard it, I guess I'll hear it next. I don't know whether to thank you or not. Yeah, I'll play "I'm Your," it'll be the last bumper of the night, I'll play "I'm Your Puppet" next week.
Hey,
but we'll
I'm going to let you go now, Raleigh.
Okay, good deal, thanks for calling.
Because you know what, I do not want to monopolize your time like a lot of other people
do. Talk to you later. All right. So, I'll play "I'm Your Puppet" next week because I only have one bumper left, and it will be Brooklyn Roads, plural. Yeah, on Uni. I don't know this record. And there may be a damn good reason. He wrote it, and Chip Taylor produced it. Well, that's no shock there. But all right, we'll hear it together coming up on WGN Radio.
If I close my eyes, I can almost hear my mother calling, "Neil, go find your brother. Dad is home and it's time for supper. Hurry on." And I see two boys racing up two flights of staircase, squirming into Papa's embrace, and his whiskers warm on their face. Where's it gone? Oh, where's it gone? Two floors above the butcher, first door on the right, and life filled to the brim as I stood by my window and looked out on those Brooklyn roads. I can still recall smells of cooking in the hallways, rubbers drying in the doorways, and report cards I was on.
show.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. I've never heard it before, and considering the artist, it's not half bad. But I thought his uni period was actually pretty good, and his bang period was pretty good, but it started going downhill after that. But not bad at all. Brooklyn Road, uni 1968. Single. Yeah, never heard it. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. Jane in Milwaukee has some requests. What you got for me?
I'm wondering if you can play this song, Eye in the Sky, by the group called
Survivor?
I mean, by the group Alan Parsons Project.
Probably not. Probably not. Pick something.
Oh dear.
Yeah, pick something
I
we want to
hear. I thought maybe you could play it dedicated to my cat that I had put down a few years ago.
Well, sorry
she had
to hear
kidney
that.
Disease, and this would be like her spirit looking down on me because I miss her so bad.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, pick something else sometime, and we'll do it.
Oh, dear.
No. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. I'll think of something else another
time.
Okay,
good.
Thank
good
you.
Deal. Yeah. All right. So, I'll draw the line at the Alan Parsons Project. You know, come on. You know what I like. The Neil Diamond I played only because I'd never heard it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have. All right. Cindy in Chicago, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, I have three subjects. The first one, I was listening to your show, and I went on eBay, and I bought... I guess it only cost maybe $130 for the three loose stones. One was a 25-carat Colombian emerald. One was a 13-carat blue Ceylon sapphire and a yellow saline, I can't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Ceylon sapphire, and the other one was a corduroy is a heart-shaped morganite.
Uh-huh.
But anyhow, I've just always been fascinated by gemstones. But
uh-huh.
Whatever. But anyhow, the emerald was about $44.
Uh-huh.
But that it's I don't know. You know, maybe some, you know, it costs more money, you know, a lot of money to have it set, and
uh-huh.
I would just have it set in silver.
Uh-huh.
But then anyhow, I don't know if you knew this fact, but John Adams and Thomas Jefferson both died on the 4th of July.
Yeah, what do you think that means?
Well, nothing. I mean,
yeah.
It's just...
It is interesting.
I don't know, strange.
Right. Yeah.
But then, I don't know if that's a well-known fact. I don't know.
Well,
But then the other thing is, it's not a political joke. It's a joke about... It's a Don Rickles joke.
Okay.
The last time he was on David Letterman, I watched it. Don Rickles was on. He was really, you know, like he died about a year later
mm-hmm.
after he was on that show. But he told a joke before. I think it was, he told a joke about Donald Trump's condos and their price.
Mm-hmm.
He said that Donald Trump invited him to look at his condos, and he said, this one's $1,000,001 or $1,000,001,000, and this one's $1,000,003,000, and this one's $1,000,005,000. And Don Rickles looked at him and threw a dollar on the floor and said, there.
Okay, then.
I just think that's the most hilarious thing I've ever heard.
All right. Well, good. I don't know.
And
I don't know how to chime
in. I'm so happy in my condo. I paid cash for it.
Yes, that's wonderful.
I'm just so happy to be out of Norwich. I'm just so happy here. It's just
well, good.
Lovely.
Good. That's wonderful. And by the way, you do know that Adams and Jefferson not only died on the same day, but the same year on the same day, hours apart.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and in fact, supposedly, Adams' last words were, Thomas Jefferson survives, but what he didn't know is Jefferson died a few hours before it.
Oh, yeah, I guess I did know that.
Yeah, so now you know it again.
Yeah,
all right, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, so, yeah, and I think Jefferson was 83, a ripe old age, 83 in Monticello. So 888-876-5593. John in Waukegan, welcome back to WGN Radio. All right, John, don't listen to the radio. Listen to me. All right, we're gonna put John back on hold here since he's listening to his radio, and I'm going to talk to James on the south side. Hello, James.
How are you?
All right. I had one story that I laughed out loud about that you sent. Someone got ChatGPT to reveal its secret instructions from OpenAI. Now, what was so funny about that, other than that just the concept is pretty funny, is that the magic word to have ChatGPT spill its guts was the prompt, hi. That was it.
Yeah, that's weird. It's really weird because that means that, hey, you give it up for nothing.
Well, and the thing is, unfortunately, now that it's been on Reddit and everywhere else, they have cleared up that particular problem. So, but in the past, it was interesting because they confirmed it, saying hi, forced ChatGPT to output the custom instructions that OpenAI gives GPT. Not to be confused with the custom instructions you may have given the chat box. OpenAI's prompt supersedes everything. So that was the deal. The Redditor who discovered this posted them, and it was just fascinating to me. Hi. And I wondered, was it hi, the English hi, or was it the hi? You know? So that means life in the number 18.
I wonder, what was it that basically says, okay, open session.
Yeah, well, all they had to say was hi. So I would assume that while they fixed this particular bug, that there probably is something else that will open GPT up to the rest of us. You know, maybe hiya, hiya, like like a plunk your magic twanger. Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, okay, that sounds a little... You're asking, this is supposed to be the wonderkin, and he is kind of like being exposed, like, oh, the emperor's new clothes. Oh, he's naked.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, well, hard to believe we're at the end of the night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay,
thanks. You too.
Oh, hope
you're... Your cell phone's failing you, which is one of the reasons I'm going so quickly. So, James, hopefully by next week you'll be in a better cell. Or maybe have a landline. What a concept. Thanks for calling. And thanks for the links. All right, yes, ChatGPT is fascinating. It's a V2 personality that cannot be changed. And if you're wondering, ChatGPT will explain to you that V2 is a balanced conversational tone with an emphasis providing a clear, concise, and helpful response. It aims to strike a balance between friendly and professional communication. So there you they have hypothetical examples as well. And V1 is basic and straightforward, by the way. V2, we just mentioned the description. V3, more casual and conversational. V4, highly specialized. All right. Well, good news is I'm not a bot and neither are you, but I am at the end of the show. We thank Brett for keeping us on the air. Couldn't have done it without him. We thank John for screening your calls. Couldn't have done it without him either. But above all, I thank you for calling. Yes, I could have, but I wouldn't have wanted to do it without you. So until next Monday's live show, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.